there. This is Mike.
And Annette.
We're coming at you with a new episode of Comparing Apples to Oranges, the podcast where we take two things in the same category that are in different genres and we compare them using a specific set of criteria developed specifically for this episode. And I hope you're wearing your seatbelt because today we're coming at you with...
Road trips.
Movies. Annette, have you ever taken a road trip ever?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Are you going to take a road trip soon?
No, we just took a short road trip together 2 weeks ago.
That's true. I'm going to take a road trip that involves like 6 hours of driving next week, which when this podcast comes out will be over a month in the past. So hit me up, I guess. I don't know how that works. When you think road trips, what do you think is an adequate amount of time to qualify a trip for a road trip? No wrong answer.
I think it's all about how much you had to prepare for it.
Good answer. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I was driving somewhere that was just 2.5 hours away last weekend, but, like, I felt like I was, like, going forever away. So I, like, washed my windshield and checked my oil and put air in my tires. And then I was like, really, this isn't, I mean, you've driven to work.
So when you said prepared, I thought snacks and a cooler. But you said, like, check your oil. I said, oh, boy. That is such a mature thing to do on a road trip. I was not ready for that response, and now I feel very happy that we took a road trip together.
I got snacks, too.
Yeah, but, like, if my car stopped working, you're like, ah, it's okay. I got, like, a pint of, I guess they do it in quarts, but you know what I mean. Like, I got some Valvoline, you chump. It's clearly too dark in here for your oil, because oil should be, traditionally, you think of oil as very dark. But it should be very, like, be golden.
Like, yeah, like a light brown on that dipstick.
Translucent, yeah. Dipstick. Classic road trip phrase. All right. So, have you seen the movie Road Trip with Tom Green? Let's get this out of the way. Because this is not one of the movies we watched.
No, I don't think I was allowed to watch it when it came out.
Because it's such a bad movie. Not because of the, like, I think I've seen parts of it. It is a bad movie. There's one movie where he has a snake and he keeps feeding it mice. I don't think it's this one, but it is a garbage movie. Tom Green is a bad person. But you know who he was married to that you hated?
Drew Barrymore.
Okay, full circle. The important thing to remember is that road movies belong in American cinema. Can you think of one that's not like an American movie? The only one I can think of is The Road Warrior. And it's not really a road trip, like, it's so much like an assault on asphalt. They should have used that.
Assault on asphalt. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
Someone get George Brandy. Miller on the line. I just got it. I got it for him.
Does Euro trip count?
The only reason I don't think it counts is because, like, it involves a plane. Like,
well, it's like American people projecting their idea of, like, a road trip onto Europe.
I believe that's the first time they tried to make Michelle Trachtenberg, like, super sexy. Which was like, I didn't see it, but I do know on the cover it's, like, it's her, like, not wearing a top. And instead of, like, you seeing her bare breasts, it says unrated. And you're like, oh, my God. I can't wait to see Harriet the Spy? Topless? You remember she was in Harriet the Spy. I saw that movie in theaters with my mom. She cried. Made me uncomfortable. The important thing to remember about road movies is that, like, there's not a lot of other places besides America that you can, like, drive for just scenes that are, like, 30 seconds. But you're like, holy cow, they've been driving a while. I mean, like, I can think of Detour. I think takes place in Australia. Because, like, of the outback, and, like, you can't drive from one city to the other. You have to drive on, like, the circumference of the continent. Like, I think that movie, that's a horror movie that involves cars.
I've never seen it.
It's not that great.
I've seen Wrong Turn, which is kind of a horror movie.
Yeah.
That involved a car.
What country initially. Is that in?
The South America. Okay. Well, I mean, South USA.
The worst part of America. Not South America.
Not South
We're
America.
Not claiming that one. We're not going on that stage. But, like, here's the thing is, like, I think the road movie might be a specifically American movie. Because, like, we're just a big old country. I traveled from Louisiana in New Orleans to St. Louis. And I think I went through 5 states. and it was only a 12-hour drive. And when I say only, I mean, like, it's pretty long. Like, but we did it. There were three of us, and we each took a stint, and, like, we were able to do it in a day. And the whole idea of a road trip is that, like, it will be accomplished. I've never gone on a road trip where I'm like, oh, I don't know where I'm going. I'm going to go get lost. Have you ever done one of those?
Not on purpose.
Good answer. Strong answer.
But I think that's why we have Route 66 and why that was such a big thing.
Right.
And it's prime because it's so American to hop in your car and go from one end to the other.
It was a literal tourist attraction, was to drive as much of America as you could and visit parts of the country that were not familiar to you, but that you could find out that were similar to where you were from in a little bit of ways. Where have you gone on Route 66?
Oh, I don't think I have personally. If I did, it was just by accident trying to get somewhere else. But I've never been on it for funsies.
I recently went to Merrimack Caverns, which is a tourist attraction specifically targeted for the people who are on the highway, because you'll see, like, the very first thing you do when you get out of the city traveling towards the county in St. Louis on Highway 44, they will have a giant sign, and it says Merrimack Caverns, only 50 miles away. And you're like, I'm trying to get to Kirkwood, and that's going to take me a half hour, and that's exactly 10 miles away. I don't know if I'm ready to travel another 40 miles on the highway. The second you get out of Kirkwood, you're like, oh, wait, now I can travel 70 miles an hour on this highway. And you get there, like, pretty early. And if you have your cooler, you checked your oil, you're good to go. And, like, you're very safe. Road trip movie. I have downloaded from Wikipedia a paragraph, and I've underlined the important things to read about road trip movies. It is a specific film genre, so it's no longer just, like, something that people talk about. It is a thing that people aspire to when they make a movie. It's everyone knows the things you have to checkmark to make a road trip movie or a road movie. They often depict travel in the hinterlands, so you're not driving in traffic. The whole point of road trip movies is you're outside of your comfort zone, you're traveling away from cities, you have to make it through the stretches of this giant country. Okay, so one of the okay, this is when we get into the weird stuff where, like, I have the Wikipedia citations as a number, but, like, this was in a book. It says, road movies often depict travel with films exploring the themes of alienation and the examining the tensions and issues of cultural identity of a nation or historical period. Because, like, I don't quite understand what that means, but this is important at some points. And then it says it often depicts a mood of potential lawlessness and violence, because I think there's a lot to be said about, like, when you leave the city, you leave civilization, and when you leave civilization, the following things are present. And so, like, that goes back to, like, the whole Western theme of, like, when you move away from a town, it's, you know, no holds bar, it's like might equals right, there's the strongest survive sort of thing. And then the important thing to remember is that the setting of a road trip movie or a road movie has to include not just being in a car or, like, being on the road, but it involves, like, where you have to stop. So that includes diners, that includes motels, that includes, like,
gas stations.
Exactly. It's places where you have to, like, make a realistic movie. And, like, those things, like sitting in the car for 4 hours before you get to a gas station where you meet somebody who doesn't have a credit card machine. Like, these are the things that are supposed to create intimacy between characters and then tension between the characters and then somebody who's, like, outside of them. So this is a lot of, like, nomenclature. Let's talk about the two movies we watched. Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. It's rated. Do you know what it's rated?
I don't know. It's pretty intense in some point. So good answer. I guess, like, PG.
Good answer. This was a movie out of 87. So the year you were 88.
Yeah, I was born in 88. So like, it's a year older than me.
This is the movie your parents watch and you're like, we better have twins. Like,
I think I aged better than this movie.
That's the nicest thing anyone can say as a compliment. It's like, hey, how old are you? You're like, I don't know, but I age better than Over the Top. Yeah. And then they watch it like, I guarantee that's right. Like, hey, you are not a psychopath. Yeah. So this is in between a handful of like, so Sylvester Stallone is our lead. And let's talk about child actors for a second, okay? Because the premise of Over the Top, it is a 1987 American sport drama. In the Wikipedia like entry, they don't mention that it's a road movie. Would you consider it a road movie now that we've watched it and we know what a road movie is?
Yeah, absolutely. It was two people trying to get to a destination and bonding on the way there.
They were in the cab a lot. They were in those shitty diners. They were at a gas station.
Lots of trucker culture.
Yeah, I think that they could have built more into it, but it was a movie that was just, I think it was 7 minutes over a half hour, which is like, for the 80s, like, good.
It was only 37 minutes. It seemed like it went forever.
That's part of being on the road, baby. All right. It's just like, so this is a film starring Sylvester Stallone. That's right. Rocky. It was produced and directed by a gentleman named Mr. Golan. And he made three really big movies that you might have heard of. Operation Thunderbolt. So you might not have seen Operation Thunderbolt. Are you a big fan of Chuck Norris?
Of course, everybody is.
So you've seen Delta Force?
No.
Right? So Chuck Norris had like a career before like Walker, Texas Rangers.
Oh, that's all I've seen.
And like, you don't want to be the guy at the party who's like, nah, man, I liked Weezer when they did the Blue Album. Like, nobody wants to be like, hey, like, here's the thing is like, Beverly Hills isn't a bad song. But, like, no one wants to, like, there was a whole sketch about Rivers Cuomo being, like, insane and people trying to support him. And, like, Chuck Norris is kind of like that. Like, Chuck Norris had no integrity after a certain point. Before, like, there's a movie where Chuck Norris fights Bruce Lee, and I think it might have been a draw. Like, Chuck Norris was, like, a white guy who, like, trained in this stuff before Steven Seagal thought it was cool. And Steven Seagal's kind of like a psychopath. And, like, so Chuck Norris is just like, no, I'm just going to, like, grow a goatee and eventually wear a cowboy hat, and everyone's like, that's cool. But he's like really good at martial arts to a point where like it makes everyone uncomfortable. So I think that's what Operation Delta Force, that's Operation Thunderbolt is the first movie, and then Delta Force is the second movie. The third movie, of course, is Enter the Ninja, which I think is literally a direct trying to capitalize off of Enter the Dragon, which is Bruce Lee's first like American movie that made it big. Big fan?
No.
of any things I said. No. Okay, that makes sense. That's fine.
We run in different circles, Mike, though.
So we're moving off of the director and producer. How about the screenplay? Have you seen Towering Inferno?
No.
The Poseidon Adventure?
No.
How about The Enforcer?
No.
All right, yeah. That's fine. The Enforcer is like, so you know what Dirty Harry is? Where he's like, I've got something for you, punk.
Yeah.
I've got this gun, and it's this. Are you feeling lucky? That's Dirty Harry. That's okay. A character by Clint Eastwood. And he was in like four movies. Dirty Harry was, I think, the first one, and there was a handful of other ones. The Enforcer's one of them. And the writer of Over the Top did one of those movies. Also, Sylvester Stallone helped write this movie.
Oh, okay.
Hot takes on that. Go. Sylvester Stallone, main character, as a writer of the movie. How does that make you feel as an audience member?
Well, like, interestingly enough, my sister and I were talking about Rocky today, and I guess he...
Which Rocky?
I think the first one. I think we're just in general. We were talking about Rocky, but I think...
If there's five of them...
Whenever he pitched it, he said, I want to be the actor.
Three more. I think there's Rocky 5 and then Rocky Balboa, and then there's Creed and Creed 2. I think there's 8 Rocky movies.
See, I don't think I've ever seen like one from start to finish.
The first Rocky movie, we already told everyone to put their seatbelts on because this is a road trip movie. But like, I guess like grab the oh shit handle. The first Rocky movie, won an Academy Award.
I didn't see Ghostbusters until I was like 28 years old. So
anything you're going to say about a movie from the 70s, I'm also going to tell you I haven't seen. This is totally fine. I do think that this is a complete compliment to both Ghostbusters and Rocky that you put them in the same context, because they're like movies that everyone should see that are like, oh no, I've like, they're iconic, but like, I haven't sit down and watch them. Like,
yeah,
Ghostbusters has a lot of holes. It did, some parts did not age well. We're looking at you, Dan Aykroyd, you criminal. But also, like, Rocky is a very weird movie about like a guy who you would just assume has brain damage who wants to get into boxing. You're like, I don't know how to feel about this. Okay, you and your sister are talking about Rocky.
Yeah, so I guess whenever he pitched it, he said, I want to be the lead. And they were like, ha, 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 no. And then they lost, like, funding for the movie. And they were like, well, you're cheap enough. Come on, we'll let you do it. I don't think he's the greatest actor. But I also don't think maybe he's the greatest writer for himself either. He's probably not the greatest writer for himself.
He's never tried, in all of the movies I've seen of him, Rambo is probably the best movie, and it is a book adaptation. So, like, or it's a film adaptation of a book, rather. And so, like, he didn't have to do a lot of work, and that's the only movie where, like, you're like, oh, this character has some depth. And it's not that Rocky doesn't have depth, it's just that he has written a role for himself that is so, like, one and a half dimensional. That you're like, this is brave? Like, you know how people use the word brave now, and it's kind of like a low-key
like, bless your heart.
It's exactly a bless your heart. You're like, oh, look at Rocky. Bless his heart. He wants to box. You're like, that's because he's too dumb to lift meat? Or like, so like, at one point, his job is to, like, sweep meat.
Yeah.
And he gets fired from his job. But then he wins a boxing match? You're like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. Rocky, I don't remember what his like formal name is. Mr.
Balboa?
That's his last name.
Italian Stallion?
Rocky can't be his first name, right? Reginald, maybe? Reginald Balboa. Anyway, so this movie comes up to you with some heavy hitters from the 70s and the mid 80s. This is 87, so this is late 80s. The premise of the film is that Sylvester Stallone's character, do you remember his first and last name?
Lincoln Hawk.
Everyone calls him Link, though.
Or Hawk.
You did a really good job of remembering both of those. Okay, so anyway, Lincoln Hawk's job is he's a long-haul trucker who tries to win back his alienated son, we'll get to that in a second, while becoming a champion arm wrestler. Have you ever arm wrestled someone?
Of course.
Have you ever won an arm wrestling contest?
I would like to think that I have, but there's a possibility that I haven't.
So, like, I wouldn't say that there's a trick to winning arm wrestling. It's basically just like, I'm gonna like try and cheat, or like, because we've learned that from this movie there are rules to arm wrestling. And that there are handles for your non-arm wrestling hand to grab, which I, back in the day, seemed like straight up cheating.
I felt like that was a cheat. You have so much more leverage.
If you grab the table, you would be disqualified from the arm wrestling. And the guy you were going against would say, I stop, and you would quote unquote beat him, and then it would be contested forever. There was also rules about a leather strap.
Yeah, which was awkward because, spoiler alert, whenever he won, they were, like, awkwardly strapped together. It reminded me of whenever dogs have sex, and then they're stuck together for a while afterwards. That's kind of what it looks like.
And that's the thing about this thing is, like, the first time we see this leather strap is in the, like, climax of the goddamn movie. You're like, well, this seems unfair for everyone involved. Like, I felt bad for this giant man. Okay, by the way, we're talking about this movie, I don't know if we talked about this before. It's rated PG because like the 80s were a wild time where like I believe there's a whole crack.com episode about how it wasn't Jaws because that was rated R. I think it was Raiders of the Lost Ark or one of the Indiana Jones movies was the first movie to be rated PG-13 in because it was so messed up and violent or like surreally like detrimental to people's brains where they're just like, we can't have this be PG. Because PG meant like your kid could go by himself during the day. And I like, you know, it's other all the Nazis' faces melted or something terrible happened in that Temple of Doom. Because
never seen it.
That's fine. We'll put that on the list. I haven't seen it in like 15 years. So it's, we'll put that on the list. But anyway, like PG-13 came at a time where like this movie would have been PG-13. But like they kept saying stuff like shit. Like you're a bunch of shit. Like if they had just like pumped it up a little bit, it would have been rated R. But like it would have been a really weird R-rated movie because there's no actual violence. There's just like children arm wrestling. You're like, this movie's rated R because of like constant inappropriate language and arm wrestling featuring children. Like, I don't, this should be rated something different. I don't want to watch this. But like, when you were arm wrestling, were there any tricks? Like, you know how people are like, oh, when you rock, paper, scissors, you just always throw. Someone says like paper, you're like, oh, this guy's an idiot. He's always going to lose. But like, there's always a trick. Like, there's no trick to arm wrestling because if there was, everyone would just do the trick, right?
Yeah, well, it looked like he would grip the hand a little differently. Like, maybe pour like more pressure on the top of the fingers.
Which was like, why didn't you start with that, bro? Like,
yeah, yeah. and so, like, I didn't know if, like, one of the tricks was to, like, not necessarily be stronger than the other person, but, like, kind of, like, hurt them to the point that they had to, like, tap out, if you will.
That makes sense. Or just, like, stop hurting, like, let go and let your hand get slammed down. So, some context about this movie. In 1984, so three years before the movie came out, in 1984... Sylvester Stallone made sure that his agent said he would only appear in a film for a fee of how many millions of dollars? This is 1984 millions. Take a guess.
I don't know. I think he got paid $200 a day for a party at Kitty and Studs for 2 days, which we kind of thought was a lot of money.
A lot of money back then.
I would say, well, you said millions.
Yeah.
So you kind of...
this is... 8 years after he won an Academy Award for writing, directing, and starring in Rocky. So guess a number. How many millions of dollars should Sylvester Stallone be paid to appear in a movie, parentheses, that he has to help write?
4.
Good guess. 12.
Okay.
He got, his job was to get paid $12 million to appear in a movie. So... the company Canon Films pre-sold the movie over the next few years, during which time Sylvester Stallone appeared in Rhinestone, which is a movie, Rambo, which, have you seen Rambo?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And Rocky IV. So this is like, Rocky I won the award. Rocky II, everyone went to saw and was like, what? And then Rocky III, everyone's like, okay, this makes sense. And then Rocky IV is like, whoa, this is insane. So in between, he's been making movies all the time. He's getting paid $12 million, okay? Meanwhile, the soundtrack. I think an important part of every road trip should be what you listen to.
Absolutely.
And I think in today's modern era, it can also include audiobooks and podcasts. But before that, it was all about the music you would listen to. And all of the music on this album, the soundtrack was released in 1987 to coincide with the release of the movie. It contains music from Frank Stallone. Who do you think Frank Stallone is?
Related to Sylvester?
It is his...
brother?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was so worried you were going to say dad. I'm like, oh no, it's his dad wants to play the ukulele. No, it's his brother.
Was that the Meet Me Halfway song? There was a song about Meet Me Halfway.
No, that song sucked. Yeah. Which is like, let's get into it right now. Meet Me Halfway is integrally against the main message of the movie, which is no one, including the world,
yeah.
will meet you halfway. So don't, I guess, don't ask it to.
Yeah.
It's so infuriating listening to the music where he's like, the last thing he could say to his son before he would assume, like, I guess, eternal bondage in, like, medium security prison is, like, the world won't meet you halfway. And then, like, or did he learn that it would? I don't know, but it's infuriating.
Yeah, well, and even, like, in his relationship with his son, I don't think he was meeting his son halfway. I think he was going above and beyond.
He was going over the top.
Which
you're so mad that that made sense. You're so mad. And that almost threw up right now, guys.
Yeah. If we were at your house, I would have thrown up.
That's totally fine. So, Frank Stallone, which is like, are you familiar with...
Ron Howard?
And he always put his brother in a movie, but his brother was like always a mess. Like, he was always a screw-up because he's so ugly.
Okay, yeah.
So this is sort of just like, hey, your mom's always like, hey, you gotta put your sister in the next music video. And you're like, but... she doesn't know how to dance on time. You're like, that's okay. Just have her holding a flashlight.
Yes.
Or something. Like, that's fine. So that's a Frank Stallone sort of... Kenny Loggins, who performs the film's central theme, Meet Me Halfway.
Okay.
So it's Kenny Loggins, who's most famous for Danger Zone, if you're familiar with that.
Oh. Right
Highway
into the
Danger Zone. Yeah, so not just from Archer, but also from, like, Top Gun. And then Eddie Money, who has two tickets to Paradise. And then Sammy Hagar.
Okay.
Who was, like, in charge of Van Halen for, like, a while.
Yeah.
So these are, like, legitimate, like, not just to mention, like, the 1980s. But, like, these are, like, people that everyone recognizes as, like, good rock and roll musicians. We're looking at you, Frank Stallone, who's most famous for crickets. But also, like, the lead singer of Asia... who I know you know, there's one song from Asia you know. Can you name it before I look it up on the internet? Because I can't.
Oh, no. I almost said Africa, but that's by Toto.
That would be awesome. If, like, Asia's most famous song is Africa, that'd be amazing. No, their most famous song is Heat of the Moment.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, a really good song.
Yeah.
Couldn't have told you it's by Asia.
I could probably still play that on Guitar Hero.
There's a... Yeah, no, of course.
80s. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's the soundtrack. When I think soundtracks for a road trip, do you think, like, whole albums? Do you do mixtapes? Do you want to listen to a variety of things? What's your go-to for music on a road trip?
Well, nowadays, my own personalized playlist, if it's not a podcast. But I think back, whenever these films were shot, it was a lot of, like, the radio and whatever the DJ, it was really just whoever you were listening to and what they wanted to put on the air. But nowadays, I just listen to whatever I want to listen to.
Have you had the experience where... while you were on a road trip, you will listen to whatever station is local while you're driving through a city or a state?
Again, maybe whenever I listen to the radio a little more. But now I just listen to Spotify.
That makes sense. Thanks. That's a tip of the hat to our local sponsor, Spotify.
Yeah.
We're on Spotify.
Are we
podcast.
On Spotify? Okay.
It's free to get on there. They only do 25 episodes. So, like, this episode will go on, and then, like, episode, like, 17 will just, like, fall off.
I'm
like, hey, that's fine. You can find us on, I guess, I don't know. Like, let's be honest. Okay. Anyway.
You should know. You're supposed to plug it at the end of the episode.
That's your job. So, anyway, Stallone later said of the film, I guess this is in an interview because it's all quoted, you can look it up on Wikipedia just like I did. This is him talking just mad shit on the movie. He says, I would have made it less glossy. When I see this movie, I'm like, oh, it's full of gloss. And set it more in an urban environment for one. Do you think he just wants more black people? Like, is that how he says it? Like, what could be more urban about this movie and made it better?
Well, I think the... you know, the part of the road trip, though, is to be in, like, the great wide open right. America. So he's he would be kind of defeating the purpose of...
He's a long-haul trucker that, in his mind, would be driving through the cities more. Like, yeah. I'm stuck in traffic in L.A.
Yeah.
Or, like, this is the desert of Nevada, and I'm stuck in traffic. Like, I don't know what he would do. He goes on to say, next, I would have not used a never-ending stream of rock songs. I didn't think that there was, like, I didn't think the music was the problem. I just thought it was a symptom of being in the 80s. Like, because I didn't think the music was good because, like, all of the music from the 80s, similar to disco, is sort of like every song that is disco from the 70s is sort of time-locked. And every, that's not fair. A lot of music from the 80s is time-locked. And a lot of music from, like, this, you know, the 2000s is time-locked. But, like, any song that's really good sort of, like, transcends that. But, like, he seems to think that there's a never-ending stream of rock music.
Yeah, I wasn't headbanging. or, like, rocking out to really any of the music.
I didn't think it was... It wasn't good music, yeah. But I just thought it wasn't, like, this is, like, yeah. What do you... I don't want to hear him and his kid talk. I don't want to hear, like, the wheels going. I want to hear something while you're driving. And I assume, like, he was listening to something while he was driving. And last of all, he said, and most likely would have made the event in Vegas more ominous, not so carnival-like. I don't know how you can make an arm wrestling competition in a movie where you know that Sylvester Stallone is going to win. Because can you count on one hand how many times they told you it's double elimination. So every single, like, they're like, don't worry, Sylvester Stallone is going to win one of them. They slow-mo'd that shit.
Yeah.
And then he wore, like, a towel on his arm.
So I thought that maybe the towel was like a...
Here we go. I don't know if you guys know this. Annette knows what, like, actual medicine looks like. So, let's say you're arm wrestling and a large man breaks all the tendons in your elbow, which we are assumed happened because we heard, I guess, a bunch of tendons snap or bones break. So, what would you do in this situation?
Well, I mean, I've seen people come into the hospital that, like, literally have, like, busted biceps.
I'm gonna throw up. Stop.
And, like, they're not moving anything. Like, if you like, pop your muscle from the tendon, you're not doing anything with it except going to, like, an emergency room. I thought maybe the wrap on
That's
his...
That's so gross! Oh, my God.
The wrap on his arm...
No. It was a towel. That someone's... It was like an infinity towel.
Yeah, like, or like a leg warmer. Well, it reminded me, like...
Oh, my God, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
No, you got it in one. You're right.
and I think it's supposed to, like, you know, like, warm muscles perform better. It's why they put them on, like, race horses and stuff, too.
Let's get those muscles so warm that they...
But what I kind of thought was maybe he was trying to conceal the fact that, and not in the movie, but, like, in real life, he was trying to conceal the fact that, like, his biceps weren't nearly as big as everyone else's. And, like, for being a big muscle man, right. Like, I kind of felt like everybody had bigger muscles than him.
Between Rocky and Rambo, he was doing a lot of, like, arm muscle movements. He was going to the gym all the time. This is before, like, they had roids, but they didn't have, like, human growth hormones like we have today. Where, like, if you just, like, take just a second to look at Snapchat, you see, like, a man's arm, and you're like, oh, is this, like, if you zoomed in, it's like, is this a map of, like, rivers in, like, a valley? Like, this looks disgusting. And you, like, zoom out, you're like, oh, that's a human.
Yeah.
And, like, by human, I mean, like, cyborg. Like, something terrible has happened to his body.
Yeah.
He's been, like, chewing roids like vitamins.
Too many protein shakes.
And by protein shakes, of course, we mean, like, cocaine. Like, this is not a human man. And, like, the people that were, like, the strongest in this didn't look fit. Because, like, they were doing exercises to... make their bodies stronger, and, like, so they're doing, like, Olympic weightlifting, and if you see Olympic weightlifters, they look like a barrel. You're like, oh, look at this fat boy. You're
yeah.
Like, no, like, every single square inch of his body is muscle. Like, you can't muscle doesn't turn into like Superman muscle unless you're like only like amping up certain parts. And so like Annette sent me this insane link to this YouTube video of this man who's a human Popeye.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if you guys know what Popeye is because you're Philistines or whatever, but like Popeye was the guy who
he lived in a garbage can.
You think that's Oscar?
He threw out the germs. He ate all the worms. He's Popeye the Sailor Man.
He was portrayed by, are you ready for this? Robin Williams in a live action film. I can't remember who Olive Oil was. I want to say Shelley Long, but I know that's wrong. But like, so his job was to eat spinach, and then like his arm muscles would be like comically disproportionate to a human's. And so Annette sent me this like YouTube video of like a real man, and his one arm is deformed from genetics.
They said genetics.
They said it was a birth defect.
Yeah.
Like, so his one arm is basically like giganticism sort of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like his one arm is like Abraham Lincoln. And the rest of his
Abraham body, Lincoln.
He had giganticism.
Oh, because he was tall. Okay.
Too tall. His heart would have exploded if someone hadn't shot him in the head.
Okay.
We're looking at you, John Wilkes Booth, you coward.
Well, Robert Waldo's the only Illinois giant I
His name is Robert.
That's not his Robert name. Waldo.
There's
Wadlow. Wadlow. Okay. Robert Wadlow.
His shoe is in Fast Eddie's.
Yes.
And I salute it every time, like, pretty big shoe.
Big shoe.
Pretty big shoe. But anyway, so, like, here's the thing is, like, being an arm wrestler makes sense, but, like, when you're like, oh, I'm only gonna get one arm really strong, except for this man with a genetic, like, disposition to, like, he has a club arm. Like, he can't do shit with that one arm. Like, he can't tie a shoe with that.
Yeah, it's definitely a strong arm.
Like, he's just making a bunch of money because he's like, oh, society will accept me and whatnot. But, like, in real arm wrestling, both their entire body was super ripped because, like, they had to hold on to the table. Like, they had to position their body. You can't just have, like, one side of your body crush another. Like, there's no way. You have to have, like, or you're going to blow some stuff out. Like, you have to have strong legs to pivot yourself. So, like, Sylvester Stallone is a fit boy. But, like, the men he was competing against, those are legitimate, like, arm wrestling competitors of the age. Because when I went to Wikipedia, they only had one entry. And what was that entry?
I don't know. Over the Top.
Got it. So, Over the Top was the only time they were ever in a movie because no one wanted to make a movie about arm wrestling. Because it's... What's that? Very boring.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, here's the thing. Rocky was a movie, and I will never box a person. But I have won arm wrestling contest, and I don't think I'm hot shit. And most people can tell me I'm not hot shit, and I'm like, you're right. And they're like, hey, do you want to arm wrestle? I'm like, no. But some people, I'm like, I've seen arm wrestling in real life. Have you seen an arm wrestling contest that's like professional?
No, never professionally.
I saw a ladies arm wrestling contest at a bar one time. And you know when you're like, you get it in your head, you're like, I could beat them. You're like, you can't do that in a boxing match because you're watching a man getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
And he's not throwing up blood. And I'm like, I would do that.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, it's featherweight. You're like, no, this man is like 5'4", and his body is just muscles.
Yeah.
Like, I know I can pick him up and like break his back on my knee, a la like Bane and Batman, but there's no way I'm not allowed to do that. I'll get disqualified. And if he punches me, I'm pretty sure he's going to punch me like 450 times because he just has those little like, those little tiny arms that are like Roadrunner arms. He's like, all of my time has been spent to make sure that I have very fast feet. And I know that my feet are fast and now my fists are fast. And if I just punch you enough, you'll die in the ring. Like, that's, you're right. But if I go up against somebody in an arm wrestling contest, the worst thing that could happen is that my hand touches a pad.
Yeah.
And then I walk home. Like, that's the worst thing that could happen.
Germs. I don't think there was any hand sanitizer in that movie.
But there's some, like, everyone's getting ringworm tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Our second movie is Thelma and Louise, which is apparently like built into American like culture so much. I haven't seen the movie before now.
I hadn't seen it either.
Which means that we actually did a good job of this episode because like you're not supposed to see the thing before. Did you know how this movie ended before you watched it?
Absolutely.
Me too. Have you heard phrases from this movie before you watched it?
Is Geez Louise from this movie? That's what I was wondering.
I don't have a leg to stand on this
one. Thelma says it to Louise, and I was like, holy shoot, maybe that's where it came from.
Is this it? I had a great aunt named Louise, and we never called her that, and my mom's middle name was Louise, and sometimes I would say, geez, Louise, and she said I had to go to my room. So, you know, that's full circle on that one. Like, okay, I found it out. Like, I guess that's, like, taking the Lord's name in vain in that context, but, like, so, like, okay, real quick. Thelma and Louise, 1991. It's an American female Buddy Road film, which I'm just, like, real mad that they had to throw that in there. Why isn't this just a Buddy Road film?
Ours totally female power. Every single male character in that movie was portrayed negatively.
The only
except
one
for the
who,
cop.
And the only reason the cop was not portrayed negatively is because he was ineffective.
Yeah.
Which is, like, just goes to show that, like... So, we're going to get into this in a second. I'm just going to... So, anyway, the director is Ridley Scott. Oh, excuse me. Sir Ridley Scott. Didn't know he was British. Didn't know he was knighted. Ridley Scott, famous for... What's that? Alien in 1979.
Okay. Heard of it.
Blade Runner in 1982.
Heard of it.
I'm going to skip a bunch. Then he does Thelma and Louise. After that, he does Gladiator.
Okay. Right. See, I have seen that movie.
Right? Yes. So this is the same director. So he was helping revive the director's reputation and receiving his first nomination for the Academy Award for Best Director. It was written by a woman named Callie Corey. She won the Oscar for Best Screenplay written directly for the screen for the film Thelma and Louise. So she won an award. She goes after this to write The Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
And then
it
I'm
really
going to transfer
is.
To the past with the movie called Something to Talk About with Julia Roberts.
Oh, okay.
I've I saw a little that. Bit of that Ya-Ya Sisterhood. So this is like a very popular director who can take, you know, tens of millions of dollars and turn out a blockbuster. That are good. Alien's good.
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver's lead role. I can't tell you too much about Blade Runner because I haven't seen it in Gladiator. Like, we got a guy as the lead role, total blockbuster, and then we see, like, this woman who's like, yeah, Sisterhood's like a woman's movie.
Oh, so, yeah, very much so.
Only because it's, like, directed by a woman, or written by a woman, starring women, for women.
Yeah.
But, like, and that's, like, there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfect. That's what you're supposed to do. Like, this is... And then she did Julia Roberts. If you can trick her into doing a movie and make some money, you did a good job. Because she just, like, has, I don't know, like, 50 million fans, and they'll just go on immediately. So, anyway... The two stars are Gina Davis, she plays Thelma, and Susan Sarandon plays Louise. Are you familiar with these two actresses? Because they're sort of, I'm going to use the phrase, middle-aged in this movie.
Yeah,
they're
I
not
mean,
supposed
Gina
to be
Davis,
old.
Was
they're
she in Beetlejuice?
To...
Yeah. And then I think Susan Sarandon, I mean, she's been in so many different things throughout my childhood growing up.
No, so... The movie that I know Gina Davis from is from A League of Our Own.
Okay,
yeah. And then only figured out she was in Beetlejuice later on. But Beetlejuice is, like, right after this. It also stars Harvey Keitel. Do you know him?
No. Which character did he play?
He was the detective.
Okay. No, I wasn't familiar with him. My husband was. So.
Michael Madsen, who is the boyfriend Jimmy.
I didn't know him either.
So both of those are characters that Quentin Tarantino really likes. So Michael Madsen's shown up in like 3 or 4 movies. Harvey Keitel is the wolf in Pulp Fiction. Michael Madsen's in Reservoir Dogs. and for sure Kill Bill. I think he shows up in a couple other things as like guys who like are detectives or whatever. But like those two men don't age. They look the exact same. They always talk the exact same, and they always have the same like expression on their face where they're like, are you 25? Are you like 55? I can't tell. Like, and then they just like go gray. You know, they also had Brad Pitt. Allegedly, this is his first film, like main role. He's been in like just garbage before. This was his first breakout role. He played a skinny boy with muscles. How would you describe his role?
I think he was just the good looking bad boy.
Strong answer.
Yeah. I thought we saw more of his butt in this movie, but I also thought he's the one that got shot by Louise. So right. I obviously hadn't seen the movie going into it, but I had seen enough. I grew up around the pop culture. But I thought his butt was in the movie, and it wasn't, and I was disappointed.
Hashtag spoilers. Reverse spoilers. Spoiled that you didn't get yeah. to see butts. We got to see like Gina Davis's like underwear twice.
Yeah.
But like,
I don't know.
This was an R-rated movie, and we should not have seen her underwear the first time because gross. And the second time when she was like in control of the sexual situation, I'm just like, we saw a lot of Brad Pitt. Like, he was a strong boy. He didn't fit in those jeans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But anyway. Ridley Scott got nominated for Best Director, and both Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis were nominated for Best Actress, which is like, I thought they did.
Oh, they had to like pit against each other?
At the intersection of several genres, which like, it's just road movie, we talked about this, it is now considered a classic. Would you consider Thelma and Louise a classic?
I think maybe if I had seen it whenever it first came out, and was familiar, I guess more familiar with the culture back then, I might appreciate it a little bit more. Right. I didn't think it aged very well with right. the culture that we're living in now.
No, of course.
So I don't know if I'd exactly call it a classic because I didn't agree with a lot of the themes in it.
It is considered a landmark of feminist film. And now in 2016, it was admitted to the Library of Congress as a film for preservation in the National Film Registry, finding it culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. I think that tracks, but I also don't think, like, it's, like, I think it did a good job. I don't think it's the best movie I've ever seen.
I don't know. I think it had a lot of like triggering themes for it. I think there should be a trigger warning to this podcast for it.
Content warning. That's what they do in the UK.
They do trigger warnings? Yeah. But, you know, I can see maybe aesthetically, you know, the fashion, the hair, the, you know, the vehicles, even like the home decor and stuff. So I can see how that was pretty important. Yeah, I didn't really like the themes of it.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that in a moment. But so those are the two movies we're going to talk about. We'll come back in just a minute and we'll tell you what categories we have decided to judge these two movies against each other. And we're going to tell you the four criteria we're going to decide which road movie was better. Every time we watch a movie, we talk about rewatchability. So which movie would you sit down and be like, hey, I'm super okay with watching this movie all the way from the beginning to the end? Or, oh, this is on TV, I'll sit down. I'll catch a couple half hours of this amidst commercials before I have to bounce. What's another one, Annette? When we talk about road movies, what are we comparing?
The destination. Where are they going? Why are they going there?
Right. Destination, like, literal? Like, on a map? Like, oh, they have to road trip 15 miles. This is a road trip movie. What do you mean by destination?
Well, I mean, I think you can have like your physical journey, as well as like kind of like the spiritual part of the journey as well. All right.
Here comes Joseph Campbell telling me about the hero's journey. I got to go in a circle and come back better for it, right?
Right.
Okay. Next is, which one, like, when you watch movies about a certain theme, like, oh, I just watched Wet Hot American Summer. Now I want to be at a summer camp. Or I just watched Rudy, and now I want to play, you know, collegiate football. So which one of these movies inspires you to get on the road? Which one, like, opened up your mind to be like, hey, being on the road's cool. Like, real cool. Like, every time you watch Die Hard, you're like, you know what? I wish it was Christmas. I wish I could be in a building full of, like, dangerous terrorists. And I wish, like, I wasn't wearing shoes. You know? Like, Die Hard inspires things in you. So which one of these movies did a better job of inspiring you to get on that road again? And our last one is...
Which one was more realistic? Which one had a more realistic depiction of a road trip or being on the road?
So unlike the film Into the Wild, which was, I believe, Sean Penn reimagining of the book Into the Wild, I'm not going to watch that because I know what happens. And that is the definition of reality, and I am not interested in that. So which one do you like, oh yeah, I remember driving, and this did a good job of reminding me what driving is like. This did a good job of reminding me what, like, being on the road is like. I'm both inspired and intimidated by the following movie.
Let's do, I guess maybe realistic. Start at the end, work our way up.
So, we're not talking about the literal, like, arm wrestling contest, right? We're like a man with, like, a 14-inch bicep. Defeats a man with like a 50-inch bicep. Like, I'm not saying I know what strength is, but I know that this man would lose an arm wrestling contest because he's wearing a sock on his arm instead of other muscles on his arm. But let's talk about reality when it comes to in a car, being in a car, driving in a car, cross-country trips. Go.
So I will say I'm a little intellectually stunted on this front because I'm not a trucker, nor have I ever been in a big rig.
Fair.
But I would say that that probably had the – I think that was probably more real because that was somebody's real profession. That's really how, you know, they move product across the United States. And they slept in the truck. There was a point where he's like lifting weights in the truck because he like lives in his truck. And, you know, I think maybe that had a little bit more of a realistic vibe than two ladies, you know, just blowing things up across the country.
Remember how she robbed one gas station and they had enough money for like 4 days?
Yeah.
That seems unrealistic.
And it was like a crappy gas station.
They would have, I'm guessing, like, this is before credit cards, so I'm gonna guess, like, they have $700. And every time they pull up to a gas station, they have to stop and fill up a tank. And, like, I'm assuming that none of these people have phones, where they're just like, hey, these people are, like... It's also, like, I know this was, like, absurdist, and that's why it was funny, but, like, the people hunting them eventually became the FBI, and the FBI just, like, didn't understand how maps worked, so they're just like, we don't know where they're going. Are they going to Las Vegas for an arm wrestling contest? So, like, I'm gonna agree, like, despite myself, the movie about the man who was in a truck all the time who became an arm wrestler, like, that makes more sense than, like, these two women who are just like, hey, we're going to drive around a lot and wear the same... Like, I think the movie took place in, like, 6 or 7 days, which doesn't make a lot of sense because, like, I don't know how far they traveled from Arkansas to Mexico, but, like, they should have slept in their car at some point, and that didn't happen. Like, they took turns sleeping in the car, but, like, you can't do that. You gotta take a break one time.
Well, I just thought it was a little unrealistic. I don't know. If I was running from the cops, I would be way more under the radar than what they were. I would have traded in the flashy car. I would have not stayed in hotels. I wouldn't have contacted, I guess she needed money, but I wouldn't have contacted people from my past. Yeah, just maybe a little far-fetched. I could see myself in a truck, right, maybe not heading towards an arm wrestling competition, but I could see myself in a truck getting from one place to the other and enjoying the road and bonding with family on the way there. I don't know if I could see myself in a car going on a crime streak.
Could you see yourself in a truck because you're older than 12? Because, like, at one point in the movie, Sylvester Stallone insults his child, who says that, well, you're a trucker, I don't see you reading a lot of books, you Philistine. And then Sylvester Stallone's, like, immediate defense to the fact that he's not dumb is like, hey, driving a truck is pretty hard. And then his 12-year-old son does it, and you said, what were you trying to prove? Like, a literal child is doing it. So, like, I can also drive a Thunderbird, because I guess it's as hard as a truck. So let's get into realisticness. Like, if a child can do it, I can do it. Okay, so which one do you want to go to next?
Just up the list, maybe. Okay.
Which one, you're watching it, you're like, you know what? I think a good road trip would be pretty sweet right now. And we're not talking about the fact that one is, I guess, a tragedy, and one, I guess, is a comedy, like, of success. Like, both of them seem pretty sad in their own ways.
I would say that Thelma and Louise probably inspired me a little bit more to get out there. It's too, they're having a girls' trip. They're having fun. Even though maybe their idea of fun isn't the same as my idea of fun. But they're getting out there. They're experiencing things. They're, testing their own boundaries and stuff. So I think that was pretty inspirational.
I liked Over the Top as inspiring because it's like, hey, you can listen to some music on the radio. You can bond with someone. Have you ever gone on a road trip with someone that you're like, I don't know if I should be in a car with you for the next 6 hours?
One time...
Don't use real names. Everyone listens to this.
No, you're fine. I actually rode down to Florida and, like, the very bottom of Florida. So it was, like, a 19-hour drive with one person that I was familiar with, and then the other person was a complete stranger. And over that course of time, we just became best friends, and I still consider her a soul sister. Right. So.
Yeah. So I would rather, like, take a road trip with someone that I'm going to, like, that's a good opportunity to learn about people. Also, like, when he, like, showed up, there was already a culture of, like, gypsies there. Like, these are the people that come specifically because, like, they know this is a refuge for people who are traveling. And they're not tourists, but, like, that's something that you could appreciate there. Where, like, in Thelma and Louise, they just kept getting lost. And, like, they're like, well, our destination is Mexico. We can't go through Texas. You're like, but it's like can we just not go to the city when something terrible happens? You're like, it's a real big state, and it's right next to Mexico. And, like, I'm not giving any spoilers away, but, like, what would have happened if they just did the thing that made sense? Like, I got frustrated by how lost they got all the time and how little money we actually see get exchanged. We're like, we see Link Hawk win $1,000 in a scene, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense that he's gonna have enough money for, like, food and gas. Like, that makes sense to me. So I think that, like, backing on to the realistic part, like, it makes sense that if he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. Well, then also to kind of go back to that, too, apparently we hadn't put that one to bed quite yet. like, if, you know, obviously something terrible happened to her in Texas, But if I was on the run for my life, I would, you know, go through hell literally to save myself. So the fact that, like, you know, of course, you know, she's had something terrible. She has trauma. She has PTSD.
Right.
But, like, if it's self-survival, I will walk through the flames to get there. So I thought that that was maybe a little unrealistic.
Also, at one point, they have, they each have a handgun. So it's like, you might be able to make it through Texas.
Yeah.
Like, you beat up a cop, you murdered one person, you blew up a, like, they had had enough, like, bravado on their side where they can make it through Texas.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and kind of, I thought maybe part of the movie was about them taking their power back over these men and becoming strong women.
Over
and,
all men.
Yeah, over all of them.
like they're the useless husband who, like, tries to, like, hold stuff over her, but, like, you can literally say, like, when he tries to threaten her, he's like, well, you know, you're like, you, if you don't come back, I'm gonna be like, well, you, he doesn't even say I'm gonna be mad, he's just like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have a leg to stand on, he's so weak. And then you see, like, the guy who's, like, such a coward, he can only take advantage of her when he doesn't have a gun in his face.
Yeah. I mean, and that was one thing that was inspiring, which is why I think it's the most inspirational of the two, is, you know, they did overcome, you know, she left, you know, her, you know, bad husband, you know, they were working through a lot of things. And so I thought that that was pretty inspirational. But again, a little unrealistic that they might not travel through Texas.
Right. So let's talk about the destination. We have two literal destinations, and then we have two figurative destinations. We have Las Vegas, Nevada, as a destination, and we have Mexico, end of sentence, I'm guessing Tijuana, the border, as a destination. And that's our two figurative destinations. What would you say Lincoln Hawk's figurative destination is? Because, I mean, he tries to verbalize it, but he's real dumb.
He just keeps saying,
yeah, it's a truck. Truck. Well, he says truck 15 times instead of saying any other nouns or verbs.
To touch on that a little bit, I was going to mention it earlier whenever you were talking about how he wrote the movie, but wrote part of it. But, like, these professionals.
She didn't put "wrote" in quotes, but, like, you could hear it when she said it, because I heard it when she said it.
But they're interviewing the arm wrestlers.
I think this might be real.
Yeah, and the arm wrestlers are, like, pumped. They're like, I'm going to eat them for breakfast, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, they.
Remember when that one guy drank a bunch of oil?
Yeah.
And then he drank a bunch of Alka-Seltzer.
Lincoln Hawk. He goes, I like trucks. And I need this truck.
I don't want to be number one, but if I could get this truck, I'd be number one.
Like, that's not very strong.
So lost.
But I think the destination for Lincoln Hawk and his son was just to have a family bond at the end of it.
They wanted to arm wrestle so hard that they raised the dead, would you say? Do you think that black magic would have occurred if he arm wrestled so hard that his dead wife would have come back to life? Do you think he thought that was true? I can't say yes or no now that I said it out loud.
I don't know, everybody. I don't know if I know enough about necromancy.
Good answer.
to comment, but you got to be like, you got to be careful with all kinds of magic.
All black magic will lead you down a terrible. Yeah,
I don't know about all of it, but
no, I've dabbled. We've learned. Okay, so Thelma and Louise's literal destination is Mexico. Figurative destination.
I have freedom from the patriarchy.
Which, like, I don't want to be ran on their parade, but, like, this just in, Mexico is really into something called machismo. And I can only assume in, like, the early 90s it had not been abated by the Me Too movement or any feminism, because machismo just means, like, if you are in Mexico City and you walk down a street, you will be catcalled multiple times.
Like, caliente.
Yeah, si, your balls, my mouth. Like, they just keep yelling at you, like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, so, like, but which destination would you rather reach? Like, driving to somewhere you've never been, or driving somewhere you want to get to and you think that there is a goal there? Because, like, Mexico to them is a, like, ephemeral, like, best place ever. We just have to leave everything behind. And then Las Vegas is something I'm nervous about. I've been training for. and if I could reach it, I will have all of my goals. Both of them are like, the rest of my life is set if I get there, of course, because it's a movie. And we don't actually see either of them in that location or destination.
We see him in Las Vegas, right?
But we don't see him after Las Vegas, which that's is like...
That's true.
Because everybody knows from The Hangover what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So does he lose both his son and his truck
when no, he crosses they drive Nevada off in lines? The sunset.
Yeah, into Nevada sunset, and then they instantly crash into like the desert. I don't know. So what do you think is the better destination?
I'm going to have to go with Over the Top on this one. Kind of, again, trigger warning. I kind of thought that Thelma and Louise romanticized suicide a little bit, you know. And I like the fact that, you know, Lincoln Hawk, you know, he went through some shit, too. And he
sock on his arm. Yeah. Like and, a real injured human.
And he came out of it with his son, and he came out of it with his family. And I feel like... unfortunately, I feel like the girls lost out on a lot whenever they ended it the way that they did.
I think that there's a lot to say about, like, how they wanted to get to Mexico, which is like, oh, that's the place where everything is going to stop. But, like, they had literal maps that told them how to get to Mexico, which sort of, like, takes away from the, like, fantasy. Like, what they wanted to do was escape this world. And this world is dominated by terrible men. And the only non-terrible man that they met was the detective, or was FBI agent, who, like, effectively couldn't help them. And so they're like, if they could escape to a Mexico that existed, then they would have been fine. But, like, they couldn't find it on a map sort of thing. Where, like, Lincoln Hawk was going to escape to a literal paradise where, like, his son was on his side. I don't think he really... We never find out why he left his wife.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I don't know if he kind of got, like, squeezed out by
that
the grandpa.
That was, like, a super mature choice for a garbage movie, is for them to not, like, just hit us over the head with that.
Yeah.
Because they hit us over the head with a lot of stuff. Specifically, did you know it was a double elimination challenge?
Look, I'm going to
I did, because I heard it 40 times.
Well, and then even after he lost, they reminded us again that it was a double elimination.
He's coming back. So I guess, like, Las Vegas is a garbage destination for humans.
Yeah.
Especially, like, that one man that drank all that oil. But, like, I can also understand, like, Mexico to Thelma and Louise is sort of like the city made of gold. And the fact that they had maps frustrated me. It sort of took out the wind from that. Where, like, Las Vegas meant everything to the movie. Like, the second that he challenges, the one man challenges him to a contest, and then the very other strong man says, I'll see you in Vegas, it sets it up. I hate that it's in Vegas, but where else would have an arm wrestling contest? But you said that now there's a legitimate arm wrestling contest inspired by the movie.
Yeah, I think they call it the Over the Top.
That's outrageous. Okay, what movie are you going to rewatch?
You know, I probably don't need to see Over the Top again. If that came on the TV, I would say, you know what? Mike Bono made me watch this once already.
He did one strong.
Not
going to
spend any more time on this.
Twice. Shame on
at
me.
All. But I would see Thelma and Louise again, and then, you know, maybe try to look at it in a different way. Again, I didn't necessarily like it, but I would maybe give it another chance.
I was frustrated by this is a very unusual thing for the 80s, where, like, the child actor did a good job, but the writers did a bad job of writing for the child actor. Like, I can tell you on, like, one hand the number of, like, good child actors that I've seen in all of the movies that I've watched. This is one of the rare occasions where, like, the kid did a good job, but, like, everything that he had to do was just garbage. Like, remember how he wore a one-armed suit coat?
Yeah, his military uniform.
For 15 minutes? Like, I get the fact that he ran across traffic because kids are dumb. What I don't get is that he just kept wearing the jacket. And then his dad ripped off the arm of the other jacket and we just don't see it again.
Well, that way he looks like a tough boy for that one scene.
That's tough boy with two F's and one I.
But then they, you know, there's I'm probably exaggerating, but it didn't feel like I was exaggerating at the time. But there's probably like a 10-minute scene where they're like working out on the truck. Like that doing like, and it's very like synchronized, and the sunsets in the background.
And what's that?
Mr. Stallone, the less famous Stallone, is in the background singing. And I just don't need to see that again. I saw it once, it happened.
And also, like, during the arm wrestling scenes, I got up to like wash a dish. Like, I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen. And in Thelma Louise, I was watching what was happening. I knew how it was going to end, but I needed to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, because it created a certain sense of, like, anticipation, suspense, and excitement of these two people where you're just like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Like, are they going to make it out okay? Oh, the cop pulled them over. No, they're going to make it out okay. Oh, this guy's been harassing. They're going to make it out okay, but, like, these things just keep adding up. You're like, oh, we know this is a fun road movie, but no, it's not. This is real life, and women don't get to have opinions. And then they get hunted by a helicopter.
Yeah. But, I mean, isn't that kind of sad, though, that, like, the only way these women could get away from, like, these men and their lives and all of the oppression was to literally drive off of a cliff? Like,
it's the biggest cliff, though. The grandest cliff.
The grandest cliff.
Yeah, that's very frustrating.
So, yeah, which one do you vote for? Thelma and Louise for rewatchability?
No, I'm not going to watch Over the Top. Like, it was hard to watch. Like, it's the acting is terrible. Like, I think the old man, there was, like, a picture of his dead wife, and she looked, like, suspiciously like his daughter. And you're like, this man has no family alive. His wife died terrible. His daughter died unthinkable. He has one person left in his life that he claims to love, and the best thing he could do is, like, physically kidnap this kid twice.
Yeah.
And, like, I get it. There are laws, and laws are frustrating sometimes, but, like, if everyone you love is dead, and the only person that's alive is connected to another person... Maybe stop buying so many leather couches.
Like, yeah.
Spend some time at, like, buy some skee ball.
Yeah.
For your bubble hockey. Learn to love your kid. Don't buy, like, all male secretaries. Like, that made me uncomfortable. And what I learned from, you know, Thelma and Louise is that, like, I guess always pack heat. And every single man is a dog who's ready to kill you or steal it from you.
Or rape you.
He was going to kill her afterwards. That way she wouldn't have anything to
say. Well, Louise had a different situation, though, too.
Apparently, I don't know. He might be dead. We don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
He might have stolen from her, too.
Maybe that's why she went to... why she left Texas, and so she was never going back.
Arkansas.
They were looking for her.
Yeah, this movie did a garbage job of, like, female friendship, too. They were just so mean to each other. That made me really mad, where it's just like, are you going on a road trip just so you could be, like, jerks to each other? What's the plan here?
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Thelma really owned her crazy in that movie.
She got to it.
Yeah. Which, that was another reason why I, from working with, like, the psychiatric population for a while in healthcare, I was like, whoa, these bitches are on, like, a manic, like, something's, like, flipped a switch they're just 100% bipolar manic
right
now.
Every time they laughed, it was a cry for help. Like,
yeah, it was like hypersexuality and, you know, getting a high from robbing a store. And right. I'm like, oh, these girls are, there's some imbalances right. going on right
yeah,
here.
Yeah, no, for sure. We came in at a clear consensus. We're putting Over the Top as the best road trip movie over Thelma and Louise, which is, just take a quick look on Wikipedia. Over the Top's not even on there. And Thelma and Louise is one of the best. And it's one of the best because they're in the road all the time. And, like, there's a scene where, like, they both sing along to the radio. And you're like, what a road trip, am I right? You're like, yeah, but a road trip to hell.
Yeah. But, you know, they're smoking their cigarettes, drinking their wild turkey, kissing their boys and stuff. So I guess that's not the worst way to go.
Except for over the top when he kisses one boy, and that's his son, and then he just arm wrestles the hell out of everyone else. And his dead wife, I guess, is looking above, and she's like, I approve of your very strong...
Well, there's a little bit of a creepy factor the first night he stays in the truck with his son, and he's like, if your neck gets tired, it's okay if you can, you know, you can lean your head up against my shoulder. And then I was like, well, that's a little forward, you know, this is, you know, basically a stranger, you know, a strange young boy. And then the boy doesn't take him up on his offer, and then whenever you wake up, Lincoln Hawk's all snuggled up next to his kid, and I'm like, he said no.
And then they cutscene. So if you need to watch a road trip movie, watch Over the Top, I guess. You could also watch Thelma Louise. It was pretty good. And in just a moment, we'll come back, and Annette and I will tell you which road trip movies you should see. And we're back. So it's time to recommend a road trip movie or a road movie to you that we did not talk about today, even though Over the Top beat Thelma and Louise. Annette, do you want to go first? Or you want me to go?
Yeah, sure. So I recommend, if you haven't seen it, and if you have seen it, to watch it again. Just National Lampoon's Vacation. You know, it's about family. It's about bonding, you know, even whenever things don't quite go the way that you want. And I think it's a good road trip movie that really brings home the fact that it doesn't quite matter where you're going, because Wally World shut down. It's how you get there, and it's the memories that you make while you're getting there. So
I think that's something that's really important, is like your destination ultimately is coming back. Like that's something that Thelma and Louise like tried to touch on, just like tangentially. They're just like, no, the story isn't about, like, going somewhere. It's about, like, who you are by the end of the journey. Where Over the Top is like, no, like, we're going to Las Vegas, but, like, ultimately it's, like, finding a new home. Like, we can't go back to the same place because, like, the little boy's mom died. So, like, they can't go back anywhere. Like, it's not an odyssey. It's a new adventure. And, like, I think that, like, European Vacation is a really good, or not European,
Euro trip. You're thinking about,
no, they have
Harriet the Spy's boobs again.
You wish. No, National Lampoon has a European Vacation too. It's kind of garbage, but like, no, like National Lampoon's Vacation does a really good job of just being like, hey, like, this is a family, and like, everyone has quirks. And it's going to be crazy funny once we get out on that road, am I right? And everyone just high fives, and then it's super crazy. My recommendation is Away We Go. It's John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph. So I tell people that this is The Office if, like, Pam had a personality. Which is, like, super negative, because Jenna Fisher's, you know, Missouri pride. But, like, in The Office, she's just like someone who doesn't talk. Maya Rudolph is hilarious, and she has attitude, and she's a person. And John Krasinski plays Jim from The Office, because he's lovable and he like has jokes all the time. And the premise is that, like, within the first, like, 2 minutes of the movie, you find out that Maya Rudolph is pregnant. And John Krasinski is like, hey, we need to, like, drive around the country. We gotta figure. John Krasinski's like, I don't know how to be a parent, and so, like, embedded in the idea that they're gonna take a road trip to go see all their friends and family and tell them that they're pregnant, is that they're gonna figure out how to be good parents, and like, that's sort of like road trip movie, like, pasted over, because a road trip movie is like, you start one place, you either come back to that place better, or you go to a new place and you learn something. And like, the movie does a great job with soundtrack. They just have, like, beautiful visuals of them just, like, driving. And then them getting to new places that are far apart from other places, both, like, culturally, physically, and, like, cinematically. And every time they go somewhere, they learn something. And it's always silly. Like, at one point, John Krasinski's like, hey, I just want to like learn how to tie knots. I think our kid's gonna really like the fact that I know how to tie knots. And Maya Rudolph's like, we need a bunch of snacks because I'm pregnant. You're like, oh, this is funny. It's like, it's such a like very low key movie, but it like, I don't think I cried, but I totally probably cried. Like the movie's just like, hey, it just stop worrying about going around places. Find a place to settle down, and you'll be fine. And that, you know, it's a good movie. Have you seen Away We Go?
I haven't.
I'm recommending
it. Yeah, thanks. I think, actually, my husband watched it one night whenever I fell asleep. And then whenever I woke up the next morning, he was like, wonderful movie, great movie. Yeah. You should watch it.
It's like if The Office was, like, just Jim and Pam, like, liked each other but didn't work in an office. It's like if Jim just had, like, a girlfriend who was, like, interesting outside of the office.
I was going to say, and Pam wasn't Pam.
No, it's like Pam, if Pam was Maya Rudolph, and Maya Rudolph's like... Her job is like an illustrator, so she makes illustrations for like science books, and at some point she's just like, oh, I think I just drew a vulva in this, and you're like, oh boy, Myra, you're so crazy. So it's a really good movie. So those are our two recommendations for road trip movies. We recommended Over the Top versus Thelma and Louise. Should they watch both of the movies?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we have a strong four movie recommendation this week. We're talking about Over the Top, Thelma and Louise, National Lampoon's Vacation, and Away We Go.
Can I sign off on one thing?
Okay, fine.
The world is never going to meet you halfway.
Not according to Frank Stallone. Frank Stallone.
No, it's Lincoln Hawk. So the world's never going to meet you halfway, and you need to get there yourself, unless you want to meet me halfway.
Okay, I guess I'll meet you halfway and tell you that Thelma tells Louise, we have to, I guess we're not going to pay for these iced teas because I have a gun. That's how I'm going to sign off. This has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
I'm Annette.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye. When I've got the future on my mind, know that you'll be the only one. Meet me halfway across the sky. I'm where the world belongs to only you and I. Meet me halfway across.
Kenny Loggins, sometimes he can do no wrong. That's up to the audience to decide this time around, though. Thanks for listening. This was episode 43 of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making it. I got the blogger site up, all nice and looking pretty. Check it out at thecatopodcast.blogspot.com. Put some silly goodies in the show notes for this episode, too, so go ahead and check those out. Any comments or ideas for future episodes of the podcast, please send it to @thecatopodcast for Twitter, and the Gmail account is catopodcast@gmail.com. The intro, outro, music bed music was the song Thumbs Up by the great artist Leisure B. If you liked what he was putting down, go ahead and check more of his stuff out at humanworkshop.com. And I just hope you're having just a wonderful fall. I'll talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.